If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
I'm Adam McGee.
And I'm Andrew Snyder.
And you're listening to Caption Celluloid and Make Time for This, proudly part of Eurostep Podcast Network and the Blue Wire Podcast family. And on this episode, we're going to revisit a filmmaker that we did an episode on the pod. I don't feel like it was that long ago. I don't know if it was exactly when his previous feature came out, maybe a little bit after that. And it was certainly wider ranging than that. This episode is going to be about Fire, the latest film from celebrated German filmmaker Christian Petzold. I think it's safe to say one of our collective favorites of directors working today. I really, really high up on that list for me at this point. I think there's just a unique kind of atmosphere and feeling to his films, which I'm just besotted with. He's always got me eating out of the palm of his hand whenever Christian Petzold releases a new movie. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It was a little over 2 years ago that we had that Petzold podcast. I just looked it up. Unless we've done two, July 5th, 2021 was when we talked about Undina? Which had been,
yeah.
And then I'll echo the things you said, because that would have been 2 years ago, my first time watching any Petzold. And he's got two of my, I'm making a list of like 25 movies, two of his are probably on there for the last 15 years or so in Phoenix and Transit. So 10 years even, and looking at it, those are two of my favorites. And I haven't seen his full filmography like you have. There's still some I need to backtrack on. I've seen a lot of it. And from what I've seen, as the people say, Adam, Christian Petzold don't miss.
Yeah, I haven't seen his full filmography. I'm getting closer to that. A lot of his early work, and I guess what are films, but they were made for TV films. But the landscape is very different in Germany, with a lot of state-funded models that made for TV films. Can be something very different than the kind of stigma that would come with that kind of title in the US or the UK or lots of other parts of the world. So some of it is just a little bit harder to find. It is out there, but not kind of readily streaming for people to go and kind of dive all the way in. But no, by no means lost. You can go and see it. And what is striking when you do that is just the level of consistency, the level of, from very early in his career, his films feel like his films. Like they feel like what they've become to this point, where even if the kind of time and place and setting changes, there's still something in the writing and there's still something in the direction that feels very much his. Which I'm always a fan of. I'm always a fan of that kind of authorial mark, a filmmaker who can apply it with that level of consistency, so that when you're excited there's a new Christian Petzold film coming out, no matter what it ultimately is, when you sit down to watch it, you very quickly kind of settle in. It's like, yeah, this is Petzold. Having said that, this one is a little bit different. It's a little bit different than anything he's done for a while. And I haven't really talked at all with you about what you thought of this film, but I was part of a group chat where you shared your feelings or your reaction to someone else, and you mentioned that I don't know exactly how you word it, maybe that you were a little bit surprised or wasn't quite what you expected, but you really enjoyed yourself. Was that in a kind of a comparative sense to the more recent run of Undina, Transit, Phoenix, Barbara, all of which are either set back in time or almost set out of time, like Transit and Undina? Was that part of it where this is just a kind of decidedly grounded and contemporary story? Was that part of maybe what surprised you, or what was it?
Yeah, a little bit. That's definitely part of it. But, and I'm catching myself this time and not being so reckless, so I will not throw up any spoilers. But it lands in a spot that felt very Petzold to me.
Yeah.
But the journey to get there is a lot funnier than I'm used to from his films. And like, it just kind of jarred me and caught me by surprise. And also the contemporary setting. And then we still do get some of those like dreamlike or like just the beginning points of a nightmare like vibes from this, and some of the good or the smart things he does with sort of natural phenomena in that setting help that out. But yeah, it was just all in all surprising. It was kind of, I don't know if it's a complete departure from what he normally does, because obviously, like I said, I haven't seen the full catalog, but there's a lightness that early on that doesn't exist in Transit or Phoenix especially, and I guess Barbara's fairly heavy as well, and Yella obviously is very heavy in the end. But yeah, it felt like him being true to what I know him as, but also like stepping outside the lines a little bit. And I know I've read a little bit in the time after this that a lot of people are comparing this as sort of like, I don't know if tribute's the right word, but an influence by Eric Romare and some of his films. So for me, it's just Petzold showing a different side of himself to me for much of the film. And I really like that. I like when people that obviously have only got a 2-year relationship with the films, but I like when they can surprise you like that, but also stay true to themselves and create something that I still really enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, it is a departure. I do think Petzold is one of my favorite filmmakers to just like spend some time on YouTube watching interviews and Q&As. He was very prolific during COVID, in part because of the release of Undina. So he did a lot of virtual Q&As, which now all live in YouTube. So I feel like I've actually watched and listened to him speak about how he views films and the kind of films he likes and stuff more than most directors. And he is very naturally funny. Like, he's got a very dry wit. He's a very kind of energetic, kind of lively character in a way that, I don't know, I'm just kind of used to at this point. But if you'd watched a bunch of his films, you'd never really seen him talk or got a sense of, well, what does Christian Petzold, the person, seem like? I think it would probably be very surprising, given the tone and subject matter of a lot of his films. But this was born out of specifically him wanting to make an Eric Romare-like film. He's been telling this story on the press trail for A Fire pretty consistently, which is while he was doing press for Undina, he contracted COVID from an interpreter who was working, I believe it was at Venice, but I could be wrong on that. I'm trying to think if it was a similar time of year when Undina premiered. I feel like he said Venice, though. Who was working with him and Paula Bear, and that interpreter collapsed at a screening they were at, and they went to help, and then they all tested positive for COVID within a very short period of time. One of the gifts that he had received from a distribution company on his travels was the entire works of Eric Rohmer on Blu-ray. So when he had COVID, he basically did nothing but watch the films of Eric Rohmer. And he got thinking about how all of these prominent national cinemas around the world have what can only be described as a summer movie. It may take a different shape or form. That may mean something different in different countries. But for example, the example he gives for the US is, you know, this kind of the last day of high school style setup, which gives way to a summer movie, something that has a distinctly summer feel. And he felt an absence of this in German cinema. And he traces it back to the film People on Sunday, which is a 1930 German silent film, which is essentially like the Avengers of German filmmakers who came to shape Hollywood when they had to flee Germany in light of the rise of the Nazis and the onset of World War II. It was directed by Robert Siedmak and Edgar G. Ulmer. Billy Wilder did the story. Fred Zinnemann was cinematography assistant. And this is a film I have not seen. I'm curious to check it out because Petzold does keep talking about it at great length. But he pins this as like the last German summer movie. The last movie that was about ordinary people. That could be about workers who were just caught up in what it's like for it to be summertime, to be carefree, to be going, to be living your life, to be experiencing things. And he has lots of theories about why that died and why that went away. And he's talked quite a lot about his feeling that when summer movies have been made in the post-war years in Germany, where, for example, in America, the parents will never be present. In German cinema, the parents are always present. And it creates a completely different dynamic. And those films are always more controlled. This all kind of combined to make him want to make a German summer movie. So with Rohmer as the starting point, and I guess going back to some of the legendary filmmakers of pre-war German cinema, that's kind of where the germ for this started. You may remember, I don't know if this was on our first podcast this year, if it was our first podcast last year, but we definitely had an episode where we were looking ahead at some of the most hotly anticipated films. And the word that was out on this was that Petzold was determined to make a film that was going to kind of continue the elemental theme that had been going on. He just made a film about water, so fire was going to be the driver here. And that sex was going to be right at the heart of this. And it was specifically, to pick up where we left off last episode, it was going to be gay sex. And I remember seeing all these reports and it raising a lot of eyebrows with people. That is not what A Fire ended up being, but it's also, it's off camera in A Fire, you know, we could say. There are certainly elements of that film, elements of that world that I think he credits to dreams he had when he was struck with fever, with COVID. So there just seems to be this really kind of wide and disparate range of things that came to fuel this, but all basically his experience around having COVID-19 and some of the things that he was exploring or that came to his mind during that time. And in a lot of ways, I do think there is a fever dream-esque quality to the movie. And to its progression, and even, you know, when you have a dream and you're aware that you're dreaming while you're having it and that the characters aren't quite making sense or they're behaving in ways that aren't quite making sense, and yet for whatever reason that's still not enough to get you to kind of wake up out of it and you're going along with it. I do think there is something of that to A Fire, particularly with the lead character of Leon, where you're just like, God, this guy is, well, not just that he's the worst, but it's like he keeps making decisions that he instantly hates himself for making and is no less likely to make the same kind of decision a few minutes later in a way that just kind of defies any conventional logic, but does feel like something quite dreamlike, like a frustrating dream that you might have.
Yeah, as you well know, Adam, I recently dreamed that I was selected as the final captain's pick for the Ryder Cup at Marco Simeone in Rome in a few weeks, and I'm not good at golf, so I understand how dreams can be insane on the surface, yet in the dream, you're really just going along with whatever's happening. So, but that's a conversation for another day. Yeah, there is something very dreamlike to it. But also, I still grounded, I would say.
Yes,
in Leon, the lead character, like, it's like if I pulled out everything I hate about myself and put it on a mirror in front of me. Like, his worst impulses that he steers into, and, like, I guess insecurities is the best way to describe what is manifesting for him as he goes about his summer that should be, you know, productive and pleasant. I want to go back to one thing you said. Petzold came up with this, you know, in the throes of COVID-19. There's my work on record while I had COVID-19, much less quality than what's going on in a fire. But yeah, and I also think a lot of the dreamlike state, and I don't mean this in a bad way because it's a very much a different type of character, but you use the word like manic pixie dream girl. But Paula Bear is pronounced Bear, not beer.
Bear, correct.
Bear. Okay, perfect. Just wanted to get on that, get that right. Because you do know I love beer. I host a podcast about a baseball team that's, you know, based around beer. But there's something very dreamlike to her character early on.
I honestly think throughout. I think there's something where maybe we unpack a little bit later exactly what that is, but I think there's something very intentional in terms of we are seeing her as Leon sees her, but also only as Leon allows himself to see her. And
yeah,
only as narrowly as his frame of mind is kind of open to at any period of time, which is generally not very open at all, which is the whole frame for the film. I mean, you've got all these other, there are three characters who are very much kind of right at the heart of what's going on here. I think the characters are exceptionally well written here, but I think there's a really interesting balancing act where there's a distance kept from all of those other characters that I don't think is down to they're underwritten or they're not underexplored as much as Petzold is letting us like live in the space in the way that we only kind of have access to what Leon would have access to by way of how miserable and antisocial he is being throughout the film.
And we can see everyone else from like above Leon, like, if that makes sense, so that we realize that his internalization of them and then outward responses is not the proper way that he should be responding here. But also, like, to your point, we get like, we can, even if we're not hearing his internal thoughts, we hear his internal monologue about the whole thing, where we're not getting that from anyone else in my mind. And everyone else kind of just, in the way that's not underwritten, like you said, exists around Leon's orbit. And that's how he kind of views the world, is what you come to realize is because of whatever insecurities, it's having someone read your manuscript when you think they're one thing and then you find out they're another, and that changes your whole perception about it. Like, just the privileged, like, elitist mindset that's born from being in the midst of what you consider a failure is what drives that. But yeah, we're just completely in Leon's toxic mindset the whole time. And I don't mean that in like a, you know, headline from the Washington Post kind of way. I just mean that in just like, that's how he goes about it.
Yeah, well, I think if we take, for example, his friend Felix, we get to know Felix pretty well. We get a lot of Felix early in the film. And then Felix becomes his own complete mystery, catching Leon off guard with the choices he's making and possibly catching us as an audience somewhat off guard. But it's because we've been closed off to it, because Leon is no longer just really engaging with him or partaking in that friendship. And so, yeah, we're not a part of that world. And it's just like, here you go. This is what's happening now. And I think Nadja, the character played by Paula Bear, is very, very similar to that, where there is something. She is not a Manic Pixie Dream Girl, but the setup almost carries some of that same feeling. You could, I guess, describe her as somewhat elusive, and there's something even a bit ethereal about her kind of early in the movie. But that is entirely attributable to Leon, because even in the brief interactions we do get, I guess the idea that the audience might be kind of cooking up of her from when he's essentially spying on her from a distance, or when he's just hearing her through the bedroom wall, is very different to, I mean, the unbelievably like personable and nice and friendly person that she seems to be immediately every time he speaks to her. And I really, really like and admire that. And I think it's just the kind of intelligence that is an ever-present in Petzold's films. Like, I think specifically with the Nadja character, like, Paula Bear has had to play kind of mysterious women a couple of times for very different reasons in his films. And he knows at this point that she is absolutely phenomenal at that. And that there is something quite kind of alluring about her in that role. And that she's obviously incredibly beautiful. She's a really charismatic actor. But a charismatic actor without having to be center of the frame at all times, and without having to have lots and lots of dialogue, the movie is naturally going to kind of gravitate towards her. She's a magnetic presence in Petzold's films. And there's probably some of that that gets played with here as well, because sure, there will be some people who go in and they go and see a fire or fire it up on streaming and it's their first Petzold movie. The vast majority have probably seen Transit and probably Undina as well, and they're in for the ride at this time, and they're being like, okay, this is the third collaboration between Paula Bear and Christian Petzold, and I have an idea of what Paula Bear is in his movies. And I think this film kind of starts out to set her up in a not dissimilar way, and then very smartly, I think, subverts your expectations as an audience in line with what the lead character, the protagonist's expectations were with that.
I think there's something about both actors here that really adds another element to this. Now, Paula Bear is only 28 years old, but she is like, for me, when I meet someone that's around my age and I'm like, oh, that's a real adult. Like, they're put together. Like, they're doing fine. That, and I'm like, I don't feel that way at all. And something about just her, I don't know if it's like, it's not professionalism, that's not the word I'm looking, but there's like, she's very put together and he is just so not that.
Her life is very structured and competent, even though, I mean, professionally, he wouldn't view it as anything of anything, but she's everything she does has a clearly defined goal that she's working towards. And that can be like what she's gathering to make dinner that night, or that can be where and why she's working in the summer to work towards what she wants to do beyond that. It's all just very goal-oriented without her, you know, grabbing every person she meets and telling them all about her goals. Like, she doesn't even need to do that. It's so in order.
And I think that's what makes it like twice as frustrating for him, because he's just so petulant and he seems like a brat the whole time. And oh, I put out one book and now I have the pressure of the next one. I was reading a bunch of stuff about this is gonna go dark. I didn't mean it this way, but I was reading a lot of stuff about David Foster Wallace and like the pressure of following up Infinite Jest the other day. This is what I do it to in the morning, read about like why authors killed themselves. And that was like,
have you read Infinite Jest?
No.
So this is no. I'm just wondering, like, was this this spark it, or is this just general curiosity about David Foster Wallace?
I've read a supposedly fun thing I'll never do again, which is a collection of essays, which was a lot easier for someone with my limited brain power than to get through Infinite Jest with all of the footnotes. But I was just so fascinated by like the idea of like I've done this one thing, I feel the same. Like, this didn't, change anything for me. And now I've got to do something else again. And I know what I'm working on right now is dog shit. And that's where we meet Leon. And I think him, his brain is just like a sparring match with himself, filled with self-hatred, doubt, and the inability to understand why someone providing criticism, no matter what their job in life is not some a personal attack that needs to be fixated on to the point where you lose all respect for that person, and then you get so far up your own asshole that you can't even like process daily life because you view everyone as lesser than you, but that's really because you view yourself as lesser because you're stuck. And I think him watching her just be so like calm and like put together, like you said, and structured, it's just something like drives you insane, because you look at the world and you're like, why isn't everyone else as unhappy as I am? And that's got to be it is a terrible place to live in.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
So, over the past, what will we say? I'd say decade. Over the past decade, I have on multiple occasions tried to write or had ideas to write screenplays. And still something I would very like to do. Very much like to do. Still something like, you know, there's probably an ideal world where my life breaks a certain way and I write screenplays and that would become my life. People listening to this podcast, that's probably not going to be surprising to. But I do think probably in part with how much I love film, how kind of deeply I think about film, I've always found it nearly impossible, because I guess the part that you often hear writers talk about of just kind of powering through something and you just gotta get a first draft there and then you work back from that is something that I've always struggled with. But beyond that, something I've really struggled with is I'd start writing something and I'd be like, you haven't lived enough life for this. And I do think this is a really kind of real thing. I was only actually thinking about this and listening to interviews with Petzold about this film, even though he wasn't framing it in this way. He was talking about really he was in his mid-30s by the time, you know, he wrote his first feature script and he became a film director. That to me is this character of Leon. He is literally not living his life. Like, I'm not surprised his second novel is shit, because he's probably got lucky to get one that wasn't, with the way his life seems to be going, with how miserable he is, with how closed off he is, not just from the people around him, but really the world around him. He's not partaking in anything. I don't know how that leads to interesting writing. I'm kind of largely of the belief that people have to have some lived experience. Not that that has to be what they write about, but you've got to have a real kind of well to draw from that I think can take time. There are freakish people who it doesn't take time at 21, or, you know, what, like, quotes, the tweet was going around quite a lot recently of Paul Thomas Anderson after the premiere of Boogie Nights. Some of the time Boogie Nights had released, I mean, PTA is two films into his career and he's like 28 and he's made a 3-hour epic with one of the greatest casts in the past 30 years of movies. Not everyone is like that though, and not everyone can be like that, and that's the thing that really strikes me in the film, is Leon is not living his life, but yet he has the arrogance to think he can just power on and write a great novel. I was like, of course you can't. That's my view from it. I'm watching, I'm like, you need to put that book down and you need to go and, you know, hang out with these people and go and enjoy your time at the beach or go and do whatever, like, because this book isn't coming about any other way. And I guess what that feeds into, there have been a lot of, I mean, critical response to this film has been generally very positive. I've seen a lot of critics talk about feeling borderline attacked by how much they see themselves in this character, in this film. Petzold himself has spoken about never viewing this as anything remotely autobiographical until he was on set and until all of his actors started making fun of him about it and realizing that, yeah, it's pretty autobiographical. Leon's seemingly very bad attempted second novel, Club Sandwich, is not completely, you know, not too far removed from the title of Petzold's second film, Cuba Libre, which was its own right a failure and was something that Paula Baer and the cast kind of got out of him and made a lot of fun of him for across this film. And he said from that, he came to kind of realize, yeah, there is something of this in his own struggles with his second film and his own ideas of, I guess, what it means to be a writer, what it means to be an artist, and you've got one thing and then you try to go and make another. So I think it's kind of excessive how much of an asshole that character is in a funny way. But at the same time, I do think it's coming from obviously somewhere that's a place of truth for Petzold, which doesn't make the film any less interesting by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a creative, but I would put myself into the same category as some of those critics that were like, hey, you're me when I don't like myself with Leon. So it's interesting how he could get to me like so far down the rabbit hole of a project. And this is a tangent that you may or may not care to hear. But
oh,
that's
I care to hear.
one of the things I found so interesting and unique to movies, maybe literature as well, but different medium and can hit you in a more obviously visual and visceral way, is that even a filmmaker can start out making a movie as one thing and then realize something entirely about it by the time they're midway through or even done with it, or even like you see it a second or third time. So I think obviously one of the powerful things in the medium that he could be making his movie and then Paula Baer making fun of him at craft services is kind of what makes the light bulb tick off there. Do you want me to set up kind of just what this movie is about before we discuss it any further, just so people have that frame of reference, or do you think we're better off leaving some of the mystery there?
No, please do that. You've seen this considerably more recently than me, so you're much better equipped for that. I will say, anyone who's listened this far, and if you haven't seen A Fire, obviously you should probably stop listening soon enough in case we get spoiler territory. But also, if you don't know a whole lot about Petzold, go back and listen to that episode we did on Petzold and on Dina 2 years ago, supposedly, according to Andrew. That's a long time ago. But we talked a lot more about Petzold's background, his inspirations, really, his overall journey. And then, I guess, the core works of his filmography, the things that really, if you're looking for your places to start, where you should absolutely go in the likes of Transit and Phoenix. So for a wider view on Petzold, I at least remember that being a pretty good conversation and talking about a lot of great films, so we're checking out. But yes, I'll hand that over to you to maybe give a little bit more background for A Fire.
Yeah, I'll give the background. I will say on the feed that you can find Getting Lost in Christian Petzold's Dreamlike Cinema of Ghosts from July 5th, 2021. So get into that. You can hear our thoughts on, like you, Adam said, all those movies. Like, if you only do two, Transit and Phoenix for me, but Yella, Barbara also fantastic. So Leon, the writer that we mentioned, who has published his first book, he's working and fine tuning the manuscript on his second book that he has mostly written in Berlin. Travels with his friend Felix to Felix's family holiday home near the Baltic Sea. They end up with a car broken down in the woods. They have to walk the rest of the journey. When they get there, Felix delivers a little bit of other bad news, as they're going to have a tenant with them for the summer, Paula Baer's Nadia, who is staying as well. We don't know much about her when we get there, and we just see her, like you said, through Leon's eyes and Leon's ears as he hears her on the first night having sex in the other room. with them assuming she does not know that they've arrived yet, because they arrive while she is out for the day. And that sets up kind of a four-person, really, core story with Leon and Felix, Nadja, who seems lovely and amazing every time we see her on camera, and her kind of, I guess we'll just say, like, hookup friend, David, who is also a rescue swimmer, even though Leon frequently tries to cut him down by talking about him being just a lifeguard. And we go from there. Interest on many levels. The frustration of work. Felix is also trying to get into, I think, art photography school, and he's trying mm-hmm. to put together his portfolio based around the sea and how people take in the sea visually. And we go from there, and that's kind of the backdrop for all of the angst between Leon just seeing all these other people that he kind of resents as he struggles with his second novel and waits for his publisher to arrive to provide feedback.
Yeah, I think that's a very accurate and succinct setup of what the film involves. And really, as we kind of alluded to before that, it's about all of that, but it's seen through what Leon will allow us to see at any given moment. He is our eyes and ears, mostly in this world. And we spend a lot of the film with him agonizing, kind of self-hating over both what he's written so far and over the impending visit of his publisher. And in just so many ways, like, we see him be the absolute worst, but also kind of accidentally. I'm thinking of the sequence where he goes to the local town and he visits the hotel, and there's like a writer's suite, which is named after, I can't remember what writer, a famous writer, the hotel worker mispronounces, to which on his publisher on the phone, he then very mockingly kind of refers to what they're saying the hotel's name, what the hotel suite's name is. And there are very few scenes, as we keep getting the reaction shots of the hotel worker still in the room, which Leon doesn't realize, like, where you're like, my God, this guy is such an asshole. Like, but he doesn't mean it. Like, he's just really performatively trying to be something, trying to work something. It's all very much tied back, very obviously, to his own insecurities about himself and about his work. I mean, the whole film is kind of undertied in this really interesting way where, like, from the get-go, you're like, well, he's really attracted to Nadja here, which, of course, he is. It's Paula Bear. But also, like, I don't even, this is really underselling. He does not know what to do about that. He does not, like, he literally acts like a 5-year-old pulling a girl's hair in a playground. He just seems incapable of, like, normal human interactions. You made reference to that scene where he mocks David about his job, that kind of dinner sequence. It's a great sequence and just, like, a really kind of rare meltdown for a character. Like, he really loses it. He really goes there. But there's more sequences like that, like when he bumps into Nadja coming back from her work at the ice cream stand in the town, and she's bringing goulash back from the hotel, and she's looking to prepare dinner. And on their multiple kind of back and forths on that journey, guy is just such an asshole. It's really, really something. And I guess it, there is an extent, I do feel like the film gets held back somewhat because of that, because it's very hard to redeem him. Even though I think the movie has the right ideas about what has him like that and what he hasn't been exposed to make him view the world in a way that's a little less self-involved, self-centered. You know, I think his problem is that he can only see 2 or 3 inches in front of his face for most of the first half of the film. And it takes, you know, it takes tragedy, but it takes also, like, forces of nature on a really grand scale to reach a point that's, you know, unavoidable. You can't divert your eyes away from it. For him to essentially lift his head up out of his laptop and see the world around him and see the people around him and see what his place, like how insignificant he is within that larger frame.
Yeah, I don't know if you mentioned this as well. I was probably Googling goulash or something. I might try and make some goulash once it gets cold. That's a very, I know they're having it in the summer, Adam, but it seems like a very nice, like, cold weather dish. You know, you get it in the crock pot and you just warm it up. But anyway, this is all set against the backdrop of, like, there are these wildfires that are happening throughout the area and end up encroaching on the area. So
I mean, are kind of encroaching from the start, like, and it's just, it's, they decide to still go to this place in spite of the fact they're not too far away. There are raging wildfires, and we kind of get these little tidbits of information drops throughout that, you know, whether it's when they're in the town and there's like police announcements of no barbecues and no smoking in wooded areas and all of these kind
and
of things.
They just
for the
keep on
the summer,
keep just on rolling on. Smokes. I thought that was gonna be Chekhov's like rolling tobacco. Yeah, I really did, because that guy loved to just make hand rolled cigarettes. I don't think it was weed. I think it was tobacco. But
yeah, I think it was hand rolled cigarettes. I think you're right.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, that for some reason. Now, I know all the characters are involved in this because they're all staying, but that just, for me, highlighted the self-centeredness as well, because they're like, yeah, the wind blows in from the water. It's, yeah, we're fine. Like, everything's going on. We're still smoking my cigarettes. And that's just like, yeah, we see you do this to human beings, and we see you do this to others. I want to, or to the environment, I should say. Something you said I think is really important about where we reach the ending point and whether or not people feel it was earned or redeemed. I could hear either argument, but something I think about good writers, whether it's songwriters, screenwriters, or novels or whatever, you have to have a degree of empathy about what you're covering, or just in general, I feel like, for your characters, for the world. There's a noted lack of empathy in his draft we hear of his first novel. The character in that is we see snippets of is very selfish, it would seem. And I think where we end up landing with this film is, like, to your earlier comment, he gets punched in the face and he's lived life now in various ways. And one way that is just something you don't come back from, even if in his final novel, he says it could be something that he one day forgets. But I don't think it is. I think that's something that sticks with you. And I think this is very much a, will you learn your lesson movie as you just, like, progress through life in your own little bubble. Can you start to recognize the other people within that as something more than just, like, people to exist for you to either denigrate or mock or pine over with no real plan? And I think there's, like, a respectful way Paula Bear plays this character where it's clear the affection from a, like, romantic standpoint is one way. There's a clear, like, I think she recognizes who he is completely and why he is the way he is. But there's a pat him on the head type of relationship there, but also she has the empathy to kind of understand that he feels this connection, and she understands. There's a great scene on the beach after they've gotten back from a hospital. I won't spoil what that was about, which is, like, the second time we see Leon just fully not understanding what is happening. First one's when Leon and David get together, and the second one is in Ward 4, where he, like, the conversation that he's having was someone where he thinks he's being kicked to the curb, and no, it's this person won't be around anymore, so that's why they can't help you. And it's just, that's a great scene showing just the disconnect and the distance and the maturity between those two characters.
And just comes back to him not paying attention, like, just being in his own world and not actually picking up on the signs and the signals and everything that's around them. I do think there is a touch of Deus Ex Machina in the ending and in the events that kind of bring about his revelation. But Petzold is the greatest writer and director of cinematic endings that there is. And maybe one of the greatest of all time at that. I'm not over-exaggerating here. Maybe people listening who are not familiar with Petzold's work and think I'm surely talking out my ass on this. I promise you I'm not. So even in a film where, to me, I think the ending works. I think there's maybe just the first part of Act 3 might just be a little bit too swift. I think we get from one place in the story to another quite quickly, and that flips everything on its head. But at the same time, the details pay off in a way that you just come to expect. Felix being a photographer and his project for his photography, and that how that feeds into the new book that Leon is writing, and a lot of the ideas there, and the intangible kind of element where I think Leon finally has opened himself up, and so in his head he feels like he knows who Nadja is, and he's got a handle on that. The reality is she's as mysterious as ever, and he's just still kind of being somewhat presumptive. And I think the ending does a really good job of showing a world and a life of hers beyond that, and maybe still betraying that for as much as he's learned, there is still a level of ignorance here. Or maybe there's just something as simple as that he's kind of blinded by everything about her, and he doesn't exactly think all that rationally around her. But I think, although it may not be smooth in the kind of, if we want to put this as like a relay race and the handoff of the baton for the final 100 meters in this 4x100 meter relay race might not have been the smoothest of handoffs, I do think Petzold finishes the race quite strongly. It just, there is that little bit of something there which is tough, but, and part of this also comes from, I think the performance is so good that Thomas Schubert gives as Leon. He's like so convincingly an asshole that it takes some time and some work to come back from, and maybe more so than the movie even really had in its runtime. And that's down to both the script and to the performance and the direction.
Side note, quick question. Do you think, or do you know how good Matthias Brandt's English is?
I have no idea.
Okay, because if they do an Eric Clapton biopic, I think he can nail that.
He really, really looks like Eric Clapton.
He does. I don't know if you picked up on that until an idiot was talking to you across the screen, but
he's also got a great voice. I don't know. Are you familiar with, I mean, his voice work and what we know his voice from?
I don't. What do we know it from?
Well, he's the barkeeper in Transit, who's the narrator in Transit.
And the
narration in Transit is kind of really kind of deep and dreamy, and it's like in perfect step with Stefan Vill's like amazing, amazing score for that film. So that's his previous collaboration with Petzold, along with, I believe, a television show, Polizei Ruf 110. God, I was gonna go, do I have 110 in my arsenal? I've forgotten what 100 is in German. I did study German at one point, Andrew, but it's nearly all gone. But Petzold definitely worked on, directed some of that show, and I assume their paths probably crossed at some point, but it's like an ongoing crime drama that has run for 42 years now in Germany, 401 episodes. But Petzold, if he didn't work directly, which I do think he did with Matthias Brandt on those, I'm sure he was more than familiar with him from that, having worked on the show himself.
I make that joke just to say that I agree, the, as you call it, the baton handoff. But as soon as his character is introduced into the story, like, and he tells you about the rushed nature of his trip, I'm kind of thinking just like, okay, this is going to be a blip on the radar character. None of this matters. And then by the time we get to that room at the end, and especially as we're laying out Felix's photos, I don't know. Like, for some reason, he just like grabbed me by the throat as a character when I thought like this was going to be kind of a meaningless role.
I think it's a really strong performance and a really captivating performer, but he's also, as a character, he's everything Leon is not, which is he comes into this space and to this world of these people, and he's open and he's empathetic and he wants to spend time and listen to them and learn about their stories and talk about things with them. And essentially, you know, we're there as Leon, as an audience, and we're hearing details about those characters for the first time purely because here's a character who's prepared to listen. Here's a character who, you know, was once to spend time with people and get to know people and know who they are and what they're about. And I think that character ends up being really important, essentially a key to unlocking the other characters and widening that world so that Leon can have his ultimate revelations when, you know, push comes to shove. But I don't think that can happen without the character of Helmut. And I do think that performance is really, really strong.
And I think it subverts what you would necessarily expect from that person coming there as the publisher, as like the, not the executioner, but the guy who's going to come and carve up your story and tell you that it sucks. And instead, he does that, but he does it in the constructive way and still showing belief in Leon, even while Leon's behavior and just kind of the everything about him might make you think he's not a guy you want to really like stake your claim to. And it seems like in the end that patience and empathy and openness is rewarded. It's a lot like Ty Windish. Like sometimes when I haven't put in the best podcast performance and he pulls me aside, he goes, "Hey Andy, that wasn't your best stuff, but I believe in you. I believe that this Yankees recap, I believe that this," he would not know any of the movies we're going to talk about, so I'll skip that part of the joke. But you know, it's just that kind of leadership that I saw from Helmut there.
He's never done that with me. But that doesn't mean what you're saying isn't true. That might just mean that my performance is always false.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. He knows what each of his guys need from him. And mine's, you know, the arm around the back. And your guys' is like arguments about Bobby Portis or something.
What about Paula Bear? Last week we talked about Franz Rogowski and we talked about like his place in terms of the best actors working right now. I think Paula Bear is right there for actresses, and I don't know if Petzold has fully locked in on what he's doing next yet. I would not be opposed to him reuniting Paula Bear and Franz Rogowski for a third time and doing something with that pairing. But I think what I like about this character, as I mentioned, it is set up in a way that feels quite similar to Undina, that feels quite similar to her transit character. But then she is actually given the time to do a lot more, to speak a lot more, to have a fully formed personality. And that comes by way of, I guess, showcasing her intelligence and the intelligence that just flies completely under the radar to Leon, almost just in a quite condescending, classist, assumed way based on who she is and what he sees her doing, that, well, what would she know about anything? And the reality is she knows more about anything, I think, than any of them there in multiple ways, in a real-life sense, but even specifically in terms of what he's doing in his writing. She's uniquely equipped to help him, and he wasn't open to that or willing to even consider that until it's kind of too late, or until it doesn't really mean a whole lot. I mean, in a longer term, maybe there's an impact of it, but, you know, things could be very different. He's infatuated with this woman, thinking she's great. Well, she's even more perfect for him than he's willing to find out, because he was just so, so closed off.
Yeah, and he's also like, "You're trying to steal my editor, publisher, whatever it is," even though I do not think by any means that was her intent. She didn't know who was staying with them when she got to this area. I'll start by saying Paula Bear is on the Rogowski level, like you said, of just like, oh, this person's in something. Well, it's probably going to be elevated from what it could be. Undine is a good movie. I think I'm having a hard time imagining myself not thinking it's an absolute disaster without those two helming it, because there's something just about their performances that I think, like, I can't picture anyone else in that role. And yeah, I mean, I think just the way you unpeel the layers of the onion of her character in this, and you learn more and more about her, and that it just makes Leon look worse. I love hate the scene where he's trying to profess his love to her and that abruptly gets stopped, like, because that's actually a godsend from him. Buddy, you had no way to land that plane in that moment, so just be thankful you got out of that situation.
Yes, it's a tough beat. Maybe the Q&A he did at the Lincoln Center I was watching earlier in advance of this, Petzold, and he was being asked about his casting, and the casting director he's worked with really for a long, long time, and who helped him arrive at Paula Bear, who the story goes for that, he's good friends with Francois Ozon, and he was doing some translation work for one of Francois Ozon's films, which had a few minutes of German in it. And Ozon had just cast Paula Bear in his film France, and he was just telling Petzold, and he showed pictures to Petzold, and Petzold was like, yeah, that's it. He doesn't like to do traditional auditions or anything, and he just kind of basically cast her off the back of that for Transit. They had one conversation and she kind of thought she was going to be auditioning. He likes to hear people read rather than see people read, because he says the voice cannot lie. And that's what it was, and she was a part of his repertoire. And Franz Rogowski, probably a similar deal, off the back of his work with Michael Haneke, as I mentioned last week. But this film is dedicated to his casting director, who passed away. I do think he describes the Leon character, and specifically casting Thomas Schubert, as that originally he imagined this as being a handsome actor, which seems like a pretty brutal thing for poor Thomas Schubert. But when he was talking, that part of me was wondering whether this was originally something that he probably had Franz Rogowski in mind for again, and was going to go that route. And the conclusion he arrived at is, if this character has all of the traits that Leon has, and he's also incredibly handsome, there's just no coming back from that for an audience. You're going to despise him. You need something to humanize this character. You need something to make him more relatable. And I guess that's what he saw in Thomas Schubert, and that's how he arrived at that. He gives a really good performance, but I also just don't know. I find it tough coming out of this to see him in another film, or imagine what that would be like, or like to see if he's someone who would recur in Petzold's movies. He's just so, he really kind of embodies the energy of Leon in this film, where to imagine him being something different, I kind of have to see it to get there. But I did think that was interesting in the way that he talks about that character, and maybe the way he originally envisioned it, that I wonder was maybe a Franz Rogowski collaboration on the cards again originally, or at least someone more of that type. Which for anyone who doesn't know and didn't go back and listen to the other Petzold episode we did yet, like, repeat collaborations is kind of Petzold's deal, but more specifically with his leading ladies. He had a very, very long and successful set of collaborations with Nina Hoss, the great German actress, which, I mean, doesn't seem like there was ever any falling out or anything there. So I imagine at some point Nina Hoss and Petzold will reunite. You know, count me in for, like, you know, let's get the full A-team together and get Nina Hoss in a film that also includes Paula Bear, who's now on The Last Tree. And can we get Franz Rogowski back in the mix? Like, I think this is the really good stuff that we're all looking for. Matthias Brandt, he can come back. I'm in on him now.
Zierfeld?
Sorry, who'd you say?
Ronald Zerfeld?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would work. I mean, that's just the Petzold All-Stars. How about we just we bring them all back together? There is something really interesting about that, though. And there aren't too many, even like someone like Scorsese gets kind of paired with the De Niro, with DiCaprio. Even in those eras, there were breaks. When Petzold gets into a rhythm with someone, they're in every movie, and not even in like a Wes Anderson way where there are people who are in every movie, but their kind of prominence in the cast rotates around. It's like, no, if you're Petzold leading lady, you might do 6-7 movies straight where you're the leading lady. That's fascinating. It's so interesting to see a director and an actor work like that. And work through the different elements of that, and the work that Nina Hoss did with Petzold is honestly mind-blowing. And Paula Bear, tree for tree, I think, in terms of the quality of her performances so far. I hope we get to continue seeing that, particularly like this is the first taste of her getting to do something a little bit different with Petzold. I'd love to see that continue to be pushed further.
Yeah, I'm on board for the All-Star team. Make it happen.
Any final thoughts?
The Wind movie, right? That's what that would be.
So Petzold has kind of walked back. It would be Earth, would be the final element
I was
of this
thinking
trilogy.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. That's my bad.
He kind of just said, you know, part of being a director or whatever and doing interviews is you say a lot of stuff, and sometimes people just shouldn't pay attention to the stuff you say. And the trilogy thing, he may not be that kind of closely wed to. So whether the Earth movie is what's next, whether the Earth movie ever gets made, I would say that's TBD. But just give me more Petzold and give it to me now. Like, I really, it's so, so exciting every time he has a movie come out. And even in, I as I mentioned, I'm rounding out my viewing and I watched some stuff I hadn't seen in advance of this, but I didn't get to see my rewatches. It's like, I'm just desperate. I'm going to rewatch Transit. I'm going to rewatch Phoenix. Because they're just really spectacular films.
Yeah, and if you want Phoenix, you know how to get it. But anyway, my giveaway that no one responded to.
Oh, damn it. I forgot about that. Well, listen,
still on
it's a
the table.
It's a 2-week giveaway. Do you want to give people the details again? What they have to do to get a copy of Phoenix?
Yeah,
Criterion Collection copy of Phoenix.
In the wrapper. Tweet us at the Make Time for This Twitter account.
Or did me, you check the mentions? Care. I forgot to check the mentions. Are you sure no one's entered this? There could be a whole flood of people, Andrew, with their hands raised. Please, sir, may I have your copy of Phoenix?
We're gonna do this on the fly. Mentions. Last mention was from August 21st. So no. And it was someone talking to Ty about basketball. So, you know, 5-star rating and review, screenshot on Spotify or Apple. Tweet at Make Time for This or at AC9. And it sounds like if you're the first one that does it, you're probably going to be the only one that does it. I will mail you Phoenix. We'll get all the address information in the DMs. I won't make that public, but there you go.
Will, now I don't know if a film as great as Phoenix should be the base like this, but I once was a part of a giveaway on one of my other podcasts where Mr. Jordan Tresky signed a DVD copy of M. Night Shyamalan's Lady in the Water. And honestly, Jordan signing it proved to be a big draw for people. I don't know if I want to encourage, you know, a cinematic masterpiece like Phoenix being signed by Mr. Andrew Snyder. But if that was to be what someone wanted from their copy of Phoenix, would you be prepared to sign it?
I think I should sign a greeting card with a dog on it and include that with the DVD just to add the whimsy up to 11. I think is I don't want to
personalized.
Sully.
Okay, don't sully the actual box, but a personalized note from Andrew Snyder could be included with this.
It sure could be.
Come on, our mentions are going to be blowing up, Andrew. We might get 1 to 2 tweets on this. All right, That does it for this episode. Thanks as always to all of you for listening. Make sure you check out the rest of the GSPN shows, starting with the Eurostep Podcast Network, the main feed home to all things Milwaukee Bucks. Right now, you should be all over all things Green Bay Packers, and that means talking to Tundra with Jordan and Numak. Final preparations for the Packers season. Ramping up. The guys have you covered. And if you want more Fandra and I, we also talk about Brewers baseball. Cruising for Bruising for all things Milwaukee Brewers. I think a stressful month or so lies ahead, Andrew. And if you want to hear us go on that roller coaster, you can certainly do so there. Make time for this is where you'll find more of this stuff, though. Our respite from the trills and spills of Brewers baseball. Please subscribe where you get your podcasts. Until next time, thanks again to all of you for listening. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Adam.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.